But Anna? I sink to the floor and lean my head against the wall, my arms on my bent knees. Just let her cry. She'll feel better for crying. Women do, in my experience. Give her a moment, then go and offer her aftercare. She didn't safe word. She asked me. She wanted to know, curious as ever. It's just been a rude awakening, that's all. You are one fucked up son of a bitch. Closing my eyes, I smile without humor. Yes, Anna, yes I am. And now you know. Now we can move forward with our relationship. Arrangement. Whatever this is. My thoughts don't comfort me, and my sense of unease grows. Her wounded eyes glaring at me, outraged, accusatory, pitying. She can see me for what I am. A monster. Flynn springs to mind. Don't dwell on the negative, Christian. I close my eyes once more and see Anna's anguished face. What a fool I am. This was too soon. Way, way too soon. Fuck. I'll reassure her. Yes, let her cry, then reassure her. I was angry with her for running from me. Why did she do that? Hell. She's so different from any other woman I've known. Of course she wouldn't react in the same way. I need to face her, hold her. We'll get through this. I wonder where she is. Shit. Panic seizes me. Suppose she's gone. No, she wouldn't do that. Not without saying goodbye. I stand and race out of the room and down the stairs. She's not in the living room. She must be in bed. I dash to my bedroom. The bed is empty. Full-blown anxiety erupts in the pit of my belly. No, she can't have gone. Upstairs. She must be in her room. I take the stairs three at a time and pause, breathless, outside her bedroom door. She's in there, crying. Oh, thank God. I lean my head against the door, overwhelmed by my relief. Don't leave. The thought is awful. Of course she just needs to cry. Taking a steadying breath, I head to the bathroom beside the playroom to fetch some arnica cream, Advil, and a glass of water, and I return to her room. Inside it's still dark, though dawn is a pale streak on the horizon, and it takes me a moment to find my beautiful girl. She's curled up in the middle of the bed, small and vulnerable, sobbing quietly. The sound of her grief rips through me, leaving me winded. My subs never affected me like this, even when they were bawling. I don't get it. Why do I feel so lost? Putting down the arnica, water, and tablets, I lift the comforter, slide in beside her, and reach for her. She stiffens, her whole body screaming, "Don't touch me." The irony is not lost on me. "Hush," I whisper, in a vain attempt to halt her tears and calm her. She doesn't respond. She remains frozen, unyielding. "Don't fight me, Anna, please." She relaxes a fraction, allowing me to pull her into my arms, and I bury my nose in her wonderfully fragrant hair. She smells as sweet as ever, her scent a soothing balm to my nerves, and I plant a tender kiss on her neck. "Don't hate me," I murmur as I press my lips to her throat, tasting her. She says nothing, but slowly her crying dissipates into soft, sniffling sobs. At last she's quiet. I think she might have fallen asleep, but I cannot bring myself to check, in case I disturb her. At least she's calmer now. Dawn comes and goes, and the ambient light gets brighter, intruding into the room as morning moves on. And still we lie quietly. My mind drifts as I hold my girl in my arms, and I observe the changing quality of the light. I can't remember an instance when I just lay down and let time creep by and my thoughts wander. It's relaxing, imagining what we could do for the rest of the day. Maybe I should take her to see the Grace. Yes, we could go sailing this afternoon. If she's still talking to you, Gray. She moves, a slight twitch in her foot, and I know she's awake. I brought you some Advil and some Arnica cream. Finally, she responds, slowly turning in my arms to face me. Pain-riven eyes focus on mine, her look intense, questioning. She takes her time to scrutinize me, as if seeing me for the first time. It's unnerving because, as usual, I have no idea what she's thinking, what she's seeing, but she's definitely calmer, and I welcome the small spark of relief this brings. Today might be a good day, after all. She caresses my cheek and runs her fingers along my jaw, tickling my stubble. I close my eyes, savoring her touch. It's still so new, this sensation, being touched and enjoying her innocent fingers gently stroking my face. The darkness quiet. I don't mind her touching my face, or her fingers in my hair. I'm sorry, she says. Her soft-spoken words are a surprise. She's apologizing to me? What for? What I said. Relief courses unchecked through my body. She's forgiven me. Besides, what she said in anger was right. I am a fucked-up son of a bitch. You didn't tell me anything I didn't know. And for the first time in so many years, I find myself apologizing. I'm sorry I hurt you. Her shoulders lift a little, and she gives me a slight smile. I've won a reprieve. We're safe. We're okay. I'm relieved. I asked for it, she says. You sure did, baby. She swallows nervously. I don't think I can be everything you want me to be, she concedes, her eyes wide with heartfelt sincerity. The world stops. Fuck. We're not safe at all. Gray, make this right. You are everything I want you to be. She frowns. Her eyes are red-rimmed, and she's so pale, the palest I've ever seen her. It's oddly stirring. I don't understand, she says. I'm not obedient, and you can be as sure as hell I'm not going to let you do that to me again. And that's what you need. You said so. And there it is, her coup de grace. I pushed too far. Now she knows. And all the arguments I had with myself before I embarked on the pursuit of this girl flood back to me. She's not into the lifestyle. How can I corrupt her this way? She's too young, too innocent, too... Anna. My dreams are just that. Dreams. This isn't going to work. I close my eyes. I can't bear to look at her. It's true, she would be better off without me. Now that she's seen the monster, she knows she can't contend with him. I have to free her. Let her go her own way. This won't work between us. Focus, Gray. You're right. I should let you go. I'm no good for you. Her eyes widen. I don't want to go, she whispers. Tears pool in her eyes, glistening on long dark lashes. I don't want you to go either, I answer, because it's the truth. And that feeling, that ominous, frightening feeling, is back, overwhelming me. The tears trickle down her cheeks once more. Gently I wipe away a falling tear with my thumb, and before I know it, the words tumble out. I've come alive since I met you. I trace my thumb along her bottom lip. I want to kiss her, hard, make her forget, dazzle her. Arouse her, I know I can. But something holds me back. Her wary, injured look. Why would she want to be kissed by a monster? She might push me away, and I don't know if I could deal with any more rejection. Her words haunt me, pulling at some dark and repressed memory. You are one fucked up son of a bitch.
Me too, she whispers. I've fallen in love with you, Christian.
I remember Carrick teaching me to dive, my toes gripping the pool edge as I fell arching into the water. And now I'm falling once more, into the abyss, in slow motion. There's no way she can feel that about me. Not me. No. And I'm choking for air, strangled by her words pressing their momentous weight on my chest. I plunge down and down, the darkness welcoming me. I can't hear them. I can't deal with them. She doesn't know what she's saying, who she's dealing with, what she's dealing with.
No.
My voice is raw with pained disbelief.
You can't love me, Anna. No. That's wrong.
I need to set her right on this. She cannot love a monster. She cannot love a fucked up son of a bitch. She needs to go. She needs out. And in an instant, everything becomes crystal clear. This is my eureka moment. I can't make her happy. I can't be what she needs. I can't let this go on. This has to finish. It should never have started.
Wrong? Why is it wrong?
Well, look at you. I can't make you happy. The anguish is plain in my voice as I sink deeper and deeper into the abyss, shrouded in despair. No one can love me.
But you do make me happy,
she says, not comprehending. Anastasia Steele, look at yourself. I have to be honest with her. Not at the moment. Not doing what I want to do. She blinks, her lashes fluttering over her large, wounded eyes, studying me intently as she searches for the truth.
We'll never get past that, will we?
I shake my head, because I can't think of anything to say. It comes down to incompatibility again. She closes her eyes, as if in pain, and when she opens them again, they are clearer, full of resolve. Her tears have stopped, and the blood starts pounding through my head as my heart hammers. I know what she's going to say. I dread what she's going to say.
Well, I'd better go then.
She winces as she sits up.
Now? She can't go now.
No, don't go. I'm free falling, deeper and deeper. Her leaving feels like a monumental mistake. My mistake. But she can't stay if she feels this way about me. She just can't.
There's no point in me staying, she says,
and gingerly climbs out of the bed, still wrapped in her bathrobe. She's really leaving. I can't believe it. I scramble out of bed to stop her, but her look pins me to the floor, her expression so bleak, so cold, so distant. Not my Anna at all.
I'm going to get dressed. I'd like some privacy, she says.
How flat and empty her voice sounds as she turns and leaves, closing the door behind her. I stare at the closed door. This is the second time in one day that she's walked out on me. I sit up and cradle my head in my hands, trying to calm down, trying to rationalize my feelings.
She loves me? How did this happen? How?
Gray, you fucking fool. Wasn't this always a risk with someone like her? Someone good and innocent and courageous? A risk that she'd not see the real me until it was too late? That I would make her suffer like this? Why is this so painful? I feel like I've punctured a lung. I follow her out of the room. She might want privacy, but if she's leaving me, I need clothes. When I reach my bedroom, she's showering, so I quickly change into jeans and a t-shirt. I've chosen black, suitable for my mood. Grabbing my phone, I wander through the apartment, tempted to sit at the piano and hammer out some woeful lament. But instead, I stand in the middle of the room, feeling nothing. Vacant. Focus, Gray. This is the right decision. Let her go. My phone buzzes. It's Welch. Has he found Leela? Welch.
Mr. Gray, I have news.
His voice grates over the phone. This guy should stop smoking. He sounds like Deep Throat.
You found her?
My spirits lift a little.
No, sir.
What is it, then?
Why the hell have you called?
Leela left her husband. He finally admitted it to me. He's washed his hands of her.
This is news.
I see. He has an idea where she might be, but he wants his palm greased. Wants to know who's so interested in his wife. Though that's not what he called her.
I fight my surging anger. How much does he want?
He said 2,000.
He said what?
I shout, losing it. Why didn't he just admit earlier that Leela had walked out on him?
Well, he could have told us the fucking truth. What's his number? I need to call him.
Welch, this is a real fuck-up. I glance up, and Anna is standing awkwardly at the entrance to the living room, dressed in jeans and an ugly sweatshirt. She's all big eyes and tight, pinched face, her suitcase beside her.
Find her, I snap, hanging up. I'll deal with Welch later.
Anna walks over to the sofa, and from her backpack removes the Mac, her phone, and the key to her car. Taking a deep breath, she marches to the kitchen and lays all three items on the counter.
What the hell? She's returning her things?
She turns to face me, determination clear on her small, ashen face. It's her stubborn look, the one I know so well.
I need the money that Taylor got for my beetle.
Her voice is calm but monotone. Anna, I don't want those things. They're yours. She can't do this to me. Please, take them.
No, Christian. I only accepted them under sufferance, and I don't want them anymore.
Anna, be reasonable.
I don't want anything that will remind me of you. I just need the money that Taylor got for my car.
Her voice is devoid of emotion. She wants to forget me.
Are you really trying to wound me? No, I'm not. I'm trying to protect myself.
Of course, she's trying to protect herself from the monster. Please, Anna, take that stuff. Her lips are so pale.
Christian, I don't want to fight. I just need that money.
Money. It always comes down to the fucking money.
Will you take a check? I snarl. Yes, I think you're good for it.
She wants money? I'll give her money. I storm into my study, barely holding on to my temper. Sitting at my desk, I call Taylor.
Good morning, Mr. Gray. I ignore his greeting.
How much did you get for Anna's VW?
$12,000, sir.
That much? In spite of my bleak mood, I'm surprised.
It's a classic, he says by way of explanation.
Thanks. Can you take Miss Steele home now?
Of course, I'll be right down.
I hang up and take out my checkbook from my desk drawer. As I do, I remember my conversation with Welch about Leela's fucking asshole of a husband. It's always about fucking money. In my anger, I double the amount that Taylor got for the death trap and stuff the check into an envelope. When I return, she's still standing by the kitchen island, lost, almost childlike. I hand her the envelope, my anger evaporating at the sight of her.
Taylor got a good price. It's a classic car. I mumble in apology.
You can ask him. He'll take you home. I nod to where Taylor is waiting at the entrance of the living room.
That's fine. I can get myself home. Thank you.
No. Accept the ride, Anna. Why does she do this? Are you going to defy me at every turn?
Why change a habit of a lifetime?
She gives me a blank look. That's it in a nutshell. Why our arrangement was doomed from the start. She's just not cut out for this. And deep down, I always knew it. I close my eyes. I am such a fool. I try a softer approach, pleading with her. Please, Anna, let Taylor take you home.
I'll get the car, Miss Steele,
Taylor announces with quiet authority and leaves. Maybe she'll listen to him. She glances around, but he's already gone down to the basement to fetch the car. She turns back to me, her eyes wider all of a sudden, and I hold my breath. I really can't believe she's going. This is the last time I'll see her. And she looks so sad. It cuts deep that I'm the one responsible for that look. I take a hesitant step forward. I want to hold her one more time and beg her to stay. She steps back, and it's a move that signals all too clearly that she doesn't want me. I've driven her away. I freeze. I don't want you to go.
I can't stay. I know what I want, and you can't give it to me, and I can't give you what you need.
Oh, please, Anna, let me hold you one more time. Smell your sweet, sweet scent. Feel you in my arms. I step toward her again, but she holds up her hands, halting me.
Don't, please.
She recoils, panic etched on her face.
I can't do this.
And she grabs her suitcase and backpack and heads for the foyer. I follow, meek and helpless in her wake, my eyes fixed on her small frame. In the foyer, I call the elevator. I can't take my eyes off her. Her delicate elfin face, those lips, the way her dark lashes fan out and cast a shadow over her pale, pale cheeks. Words fail me as I try to memorize every detail. I have no dazzling lines, no quick wit, no arrogant commands. I have nothing, nothing but a yawning void inside my chest. The elevator doors open, and Anna heads straight in. She looks around at me, and for a moment her mask slips, and there it is, my pain reflected on her beautiful face.
No, Anna, don't go. Goodbye, Christian.
Anna,
goodbye.
The doors close, and she's gone. I sink slowly to the floor and put my head in my hands. The void is now cavernous and aching, overwhelming me.
Gray, what the hell have you done?
When I look up again, the paintings in my foyer, my Madonnas, bring a mirthless smile to my lips. The idealization of motherhood, all of them gazing at their infants, or staring inauspiciously down at me. They're right to look at me that way. She's gone. She's really gone. The best thing that ever happened to me. After she said she'd never leave. She promised me she'd never leave. I close my eyes, shutting out those lifeless, pitying stares, and tip my head back against the wall. Okay, she said it in her sleep. And like the fool I am, I believed her. I've always known deep down I was no good for her, and she was too good for me. This is how it should be. Then why do I feel like shit? Why is this so painful? The chime announcing the arrival of the elevator forces my eyes open again, and my heart leaps into my mouth. She's back. I sit paralyzed, waiting, and the doors pull back. And Taylor steps out and momentarily freezes.
Hell, how long have I been sitting here?
Miss Steele is home, Mr. Gray, he says, as if he addresses me while I'm prostrate on the floor every day.
How was she? I ask, as dispassionately as I can, though I really want to know.
Upset, sir, he says, showing no emotion whatsoever.
I nod, dismissing him, but he doesn't leave. "Can I get you anything, sir?" he asks, much too kindly for my liking. "No." "Go, leave me alone." "Sir," he says, and he exits, leaving me slouched on the foyer floor. Much as I'd like to sit here all day and wallow in my despair, I can't. I want an update from Welch, and I need to call Leela's poor excuse for a husband. And I need a shower. Perhaps this agony will wash away in the shower. As I stand, I touch the wooden table that dominates the foyer, my fingers absent-mindedly tracing its delicate marquetry. I'd have liked to fuck Miss Steele over this. I close my eyes, imagining her sprawled across this table, her head held back, chin up, mouth open in ecstasy, and her luscious hair pooling over the edge. Shit, it makes me hard just thinking about it. Fuck. The pain in my gut twists and tightens. She's gone, Gray. Get used to it. And drawing on years of enforced control, I bring my body to heal. The shower is blistering, the temperature just a notch below painful, the way I like it. I stand beneath the cascade, trying to forget her, hoping this heat will scorch her out of my head and wash her scent off my body. If she's going to leave, there's no coming back. Never. I scrub my hair with grim determination. Good riddance. And I suck in a breath. No, not good riddance. I raise my face to the streaming water. It's not good riddance at all. I'm going to miss her. I lean my forehead against the tiles. Just last night she was in here with me. I stare at my hands, my fingers caressing the line of grout in the tiles, where only yesterday her hands were braced against the wall. Fuck this. Switching off the water, I step out of the shower cubicle. As I wrap a towel around my waist, it sinks in. Each day will be darker and emptier because she's no longer in it. No more facetious, witty emails. No more of her smart mouth. No more curiosity. Her bright blue eyes will no longer regard me in thinly veiled amusement, or shock, or lust. I stare at the brooding, morose jerk staring back at me in the bathroom mirror. "What the hell have you done, asshole?" I sneer at him. He mouths the words back at me with vitriolic contempt, and the bastard blinks at me, big gray eyes raw with misery. "She's better off without you. You can't be what she wants. You can't give her what she needs. She wants hearts and flowers. She deserves better than you, you fucked up prick." Repulsed by the image glowering back at me, I turn away from the mirror. To hell with shaving for today. I dry off at my chest of drawers and grab some underwear and a clean t-shirt. As I turn, I notice a small box on my pillow. The rug is pulled from under me again, revealing once more the abyss beneath, its jaws open, waiting for me, and my anger turns to fear. It's something from her. What would she give me? I drop my clothes and, taking a deep breath, sit on the bed and pick up the box. It's a glider. A model-making kit for a Blahnik L-23. A scribbled note falls from the top of the box and wafts onto the bed. "This reminded me of a happy time. Thank you, Anna." It's the perfect present from the perfect girl. Pain lances through me. Why is this so painful? Why? Some long-lost, ugly memory stirs, trying to sink its teeth into the here and now. No, that is not a place I want my mind to return to. I get up, tossing the box onto the bed, and dress hurriedly. When I'm finished, I grab the box and the note and head for my study. I will handle this better from my seat of power. My conversation with Welch is brief. My conversation with Russell Reed, the miserable lying bastard who married Leela, is briefer. I didn't know that they'd wed during one drunken weekend in Vegas. No wonder their marriage failed after just 18 months. She left him 12 weeks ago. So where are you now, Leela Williams? What have you been doing? I focus my mind on Leela, trying to think of some clue from our past that might tell me where she is. I need to know. I need to know she's safe. And why she came here. Why me? She wanted more, and I didn't, but that was long ago. It was easy when she left. Our arrangement was terminated by mutual consent. In fact, our whole arrangement had been exemplary, just how it should be. She was mischievous when she was with me, deliberately so, and not the broken creature that Gale described. I recalled how much she enjoyed our sessions in the playroom. Leela loved the kink. A memory surfaces. I'm tying her big toes together, turning her feet in so she can't clench her backside and avoid the pain. Yeah, she loved all that shit, and so did I. She was a great submissive. But she never captured my attention like Anastasia Steele. She never drove me to distraction like Anna. I gaze at the glider kit on my desk and trace the edges of the box with my finger, knowing that Anna's fingers have touched it. My sweet Anastasia. What a contrast you are to all the women I've known. The only woman I've ever chased, and the one woman who can't give me what I want. I don't understand. I've come alive since I've known her. These last few weeks have been the most exciting, the most unpredictable, the most fascinating in my life. I've been enticed from my monochrome world into one rich with color. And yet she can't be what I need. I put my head in my hands. She will never like what I do. I tried to convince myself that we could work up to the rougher shit. But that's not going to happen, ever. She's better off without me. What would she want with a fucked up monster who can't bear to be touched? And yet she bought me this thoughtful gift. Who does that for me, apart from my family? I study the box once more and open it. All the plastic parts of the craft are stuck on one grid, swathed in cellophane. Memories of her squealing in the glider during the wingover come to mind. Her hands up, braced against the Perspex canopy. I can't help but smile. Lord, that was so much fun. The equivalent of pulling her pigtails in the playground. Anna in pigtails. I shut down that thought immediately. I don't want to go there. Our first bath. And all I'm left with is the thought that I won't see her again. The abyss yawns open. No. Not again. I need to make this plain. It will be a distraction. Ripping open the cellophane, I scan the instructions. I need glue, modeling glue. I search through my desk drawers. Shit. Nestled at the back of one drawer, I find the red leather box containing the Cartier earrings. I never got the chance to give them to her, and now I never will. I call Andrea and leave a message on her cell, asking her to cancel tonight. I can't face the gala, not without my date. I open the red leather box and examine the earrings. They are beautiful, simple yet elegant, just like the enchanting Miss Steele, who left me this morning because I punished her, because I pushed her too hard. I cradle my head once again. But she let me. She didn't stop me. She let me because she loves me. The thought is horrifying, and I dismiss it immediately. She can't. It's simple. No one can feel like that about me. Not if they know me. Move on, Gray. Focus. Where's the damned glue? I stash the earrings back in the drawer and continue my search. Nothing. I buzz Taylor. Mr. Gray, I need some modeling glue. He pauses for a moment.
For what sort of model, sir?
A model glider.
Balsa wood or plastic?
Plastic. I have some. I'll bring it down now, sir. I thank him, a little stunned that he has modeling glue. Moments later, he knocks on the door.
Come in.
He paces into my study and places the small plastic container on my desk. He doesn't leave, and I have to ask, why do you have this?
I build the odd plane.
His face reddens.
Oh?
My curiosity is piqued.
Flying was my first love, sir.
I don't understand.
Colorblind, he explains flatly.
So you became a Marine?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for this.
No problem, Mr. Gray. Have you eaten?
His question takes me by surprise. I'm not hungry, Taylor. Please go enjoy the afternoon with your daughter, and I'll see you tomorrow. I won't bother you again.
He pauses for a moment, and my irritation builds.
Go.
I'm good.
Hell, my voice is choked.
Sir?
He nods.
I'll return tomorrow evening.
I give him a quick dismissive nod, and he's gone. When was the last time Taylor offered me anything to eat? I must look more fucked up than I thought. Sulking, I grab the glue. The glider is in the palm of my hand. I marvel at it with a sense of achievement, memories of that flight nudging my consciousness. Anastasia was impossible to wake. I smile as I recall. And once up, she was difficult, disarming, and beautiful, and funny. Christ, that was fun. Her girlish excitement during the flight, the squealing, and afterward, our kiss. It was my first attempt at more. It's extraordinary that over such a short time I have collected so many happy memories. The pain surfaces once more, nagging, aching, reminding me of all that I've lost. Focus on the glider, Gray. Now I have to stick the transfers in place. They're fiddly little suckers. Finally, the last one is on and drying. My glider has its own FAA registration. November 952 Echo Charlie. Echo Charlie. I look up and the light is fading. It's late. My first thought is that I can show this to Anna. No more Anna. I clench my teeth and stretch my stiff shoulders. Standing slowly, I realize I haven't eaten all day or had anything to drink, and my head is throbbing. I feel like shit. I check my phone in the hope that she's called, but there's only a text from Andrea.
CC Gala canceled. Hope all well. A.
While I'm reading Andrea's message, the phone buzzes. My heart rate immediately spikes, then falls when I recognize it's Elena. Hello. I don't bother to disguise my disappointment. Christian, is that any way to say hi? What's eating you? She scolds, but her voice is full of humor. I stare out the window. It's dusk over Seattle. I wonder briefly what Anna is doing. I don't want to tell Elena what's happened. I don't want to say the words out loud and make them a reality.
Christian, what gives? Tell me.
Her tone shifts to brusque and annoyed. She left me, I mutter, sounding morose.
Oh,
Elena sounds surprised. Want me to come over? No. She takes a deep breath. This life isn't for everyone. I know.
Hell, Christian, you sound like shit. Do you want to go out to dinner?
No.
I'm coming over.
No, Elena. I'm not good company. I'm tired and I want to be alone. I'll call you during the week.
Christian, it's for the best.
I know. Goodbye. I hang up. I don't want to talk to her. She encouraged me to fly down to Savannah. Perhaps she knew this day would come. I scowl at the phone, toss it onto my desk, and go in search of something to drink and eat. I examine the contents of my fridge. Nothing appeals. In the cupboard, I find a bag of pretzels. I open them and eat one after the other as I walk to the window. Outside, night has fallen. Lights twinkle and wink through the pouring rain. The world moves on. Move on, Gray. Move on. Sunday, June 5th, 2011. I gaze up at the bedroom ceiling. Sleep eludes me. I'm tormented by Anna's fragrance, which still clings to my bedsheets. I pull her pillow over my face to breathe in her scent. It's torture. It's heaven. And for a moment, I contemplate death by suffocation. Get a grip, Gray. I rerun the morning's events in my head. Could they have unfolded any differently? As a rule, I never do this, because it's a waste of energy. But today, I'm looking for clues as to where I went wrong. And no matter how I play it out, I know in my bones we would have reached this impasse. Whether it was this morning, or in a week, or a month, or a year. Better that it happened now, before I inflicted any further pain on Anastasia. I think of her, huddled in her little white bed. I can't picture her in the new apartment. I've not been there. But I imagine her in that room in Vancouver where I once slept with her. I shake my head. That was the best night's sleep I'd had in years. The radio alarm reads 2 o'clock in the morning. I have lain here for 2 hours, my mind churning. I take a deep breath, inhaling her scent once more, and I close my eyes. Mommy can't see me. I stand in front of her. She can't see me. She's asleep with her eyes open, or sick. I hear a rattle, his keys. He's back. I run and hide and make myself small under the table in the kitchen. My cars are here with me. Bang! The door slams shut, making me jump. Through my fingers, I see Mommy. She turns her head to see him. Then she's asleep on the couch. He's wearing his big boots with the shiny buckles and standing over Mommy, shouting. He hits Mommy with the belt.
Get up! Get up! You are one fucked up bitch. You are one fucked up bitch.
Mommy makes a noise. A wailing noise.
Stop! Stop hitting Mommy! Stop hitting Mommy!
I run at him and hit him. And I hit him and I hit him. But he laughs and smacks me across the face.
No!
Mommy shouts.
You are one fucked up bitch.
Mommy makes herself small, small like me, and then she's quiet.
You are one fucked up bitch. You are one fucked up bitch. You are one fucked up bitch.
I am under the table. I have my fingers in my ears, and I close my eyes. The sound stops. He turns and I can see his boots as he stomps into the kitchen. He carries the belt, slapping it against his leg. He is trying to find me. He stoops down and grins. He smells nasty, of smoking and drinking and bad smells.
There you are, you little shit.
A chilling wail wakes me up. I'm drenched in sweat, and my heart is pounding. I sit bolt upright in bed. Fuck. The eerie noise was from me. I take a deep, steadying breath, trying to rid my memory of the smell of body odor and cheap bourbon and stale Camel cigarettes.
You are one fucked up son of a bitch.
Anna's words ring in my head. Like his. Fuck. I couldn't help the crack whore. I tried. Good God, I tried. There you are, you little shit. But I could help Anna. I let her go. I had to let her go. She didn't need all this shit. I glance at the clock. It's 3:30. I head into the kitchen, and after drinking a large glass of water, I make my way to the piano. I wake again with a jolt, and it's light. Early morning sunshine fills the room. I was dreaming of Anna. Anna kissing me, her tongue in my mouth, my fingers in her hair, pressing her delectable body against me, her hands tethered above her head. Where is she? For one sweet moment, I forget all that transpired yesterday. Then it floods back. She's gone. Fuck. The evidence of my desire presses into the mattress, but the memory of her bright eyes, clouded with hurt and humiliation as she left, soon solves that problem. Feeling like shit, I lie on my back and stare at the ceiling, arms behind my head. The day stretches out before me, and for the first time in years, I don't know what to do with myself. I check the time again. 5:58. Hell, I might as well go for a run. Prokofiev's Arrival of the Montagues and Capulets blares in my ears as I pound the sidewalk through the early morning quiet of 4th Avenue. I ache everywhere. My lungs are bursting. My head is throbbing, and the yawning, dull ache of loss eats away at my insides. I cannot run from this pain, though I'm trying. I stop to change the music and drag precious air into my lungs. I want something violent. Pump It by the Black Eyed Peas. Yeah. I pick up the pace. I find myself running down Vine Street. And I know it's insane, but I hope to see her. As I near her street, my heart races still harder, and my anxiety escalates. I'm not desperate to see her. I just want to check that she's okay. No, that's not true. I want to see her. Finally on her street, I pace past her apartment building. All is quiet. An Oldsmobile trundles up the road. Two dog walkers are out. But there's no sign of life from inside her apartment. Crossing the street, I pause on the sidewalk opposite, then duck into the doorway of an apartment building to catch my breath. The curtains of one room are closed, the others open. Perhaps that's her room. Maybe she's still asleep, if she's there at all. A nightmare scenario forms in my mind. She went out last night, got drunk, met someone. No. Bile rises in my throat. The thought of her body in someone else's hands, some asshole basking in the warmth of her smile, making her giggle, making her laugh, making her come. It takes all my self-control not to go barging through the front door of her apartment to check that she's there and on her own. You brought this on yourself, Gray. Forget her. She's not for you. I tug my Seahawks cap low over my face and sprint on down Western Avenue. My jealousy is raw and angry. It fills the gaping hole. I hate it. It stirs something deep in my psyche that I really don't want to examine. I run harder, away from that memory, away from the pain, away from Anastasia Steele. It's dusk over Seattle. I stand up and stretch. I've been at my desk in my study all day, and it's been productive. Roz has worked hard, too. She's prepared and sent me a first draft business plan and letter of intent for SIP. At least I'll be able to keep an eye on Anna. The thought is painful and appealing in equal measure. I've read and commented on two patent applications, a few contracts, and a new design spec. And while lost in the detail of those, I have not thought about her. The little glider is still on my desk, taunting me, reminding me of happier times, like she said. I picture her standing in the doorway of my study, wearing one of my t-shirts, all long legs and blue eyes, just before she seduced me. Another first. I miss her. There, I admit it. I check my phone, hoping in vain, and there's a text from Elliot. Beer, hotshot? I respond. No, busy. Elliot's response is immediate. Fuck you, then. Yeah, fuck me. Nothing from Anna. No missed call, no email. The nagging pain in my gut intensifies. She's not going to call. She wanted out. She wanted to get away from me, and I can't blame her. It's for the best. I head to the kitchen for a change of scenery. Gail is back. The kitchen has been cleaned, and there's a pot bubbling on the stove. Smells good, but I'm not hungry. She walks in while I'm eyeing what's cooking. Good evening, sir. Gail. She pauses, surprised by something. Surprised by me? Shit, I must look bad.
Chicken chasseur?
She asks, her voice uncertain. Sure, I mutter.
For two?
She asks. I stare at her, and she looks embarrassed. For one.
10 minutes?
She says, her voice wavering. Fine. My voice is frigid. I turn to leave.
Mr. Gray?
She stops me. What, Gail?
It's nothing. Sorry to disturb you.
She turns to the stove to stir the chicken, and I head off to have another shower. Christ, even my staff have noticed that something's rotten in the state of fucking Denmark. Monday, June 6th, 2011. I dread going to bed. It's after midnight, and I'm tired, but I sit at my piano, playing the Bach Marcello piece over and over again. Remembering her head resting on my shoulder, I can almost smell her sweet fragrance. For fuck's sake, she said she'd try. I stop playing and clutch my head in both hands, my elbows hammering out two discordant chords as I lean on the keys. She said she'd try, but she fell at the first hurdle. Then she ran. Why did I hit her so hard? Deep inside, I know the answer. Because she asked me to, and I was too impetuous and selfish to resist the temptation. Seduced by her challenge, I seized the opportunity to move us on to where I wanted us to be. And she didn't safe word, and I hurt her more than she could take. When I promised her I'd never do that. What a fucking fool I am. How could she trust me after that? It's right that she's gone. Why the hell would she want to be with me anyway? I contemplate getting drunk. I have not been drunk since I was 15. Well, once when I was 21. I loathe the loss of control. I know what alcohol can do to a man. I shudder and snap my mind shut to those memories and decide to call it a night. Lying in my bed, I pray for a dreamless sleep. But if I am to dream, I want to dream of her.
Mommy is pretty today. She sits down and lets me brush her hair. She looks at me in the mirror, and she smiles her special smile. Her special smile for me. There is a loud noise. A crash. He's back. No.
Where the fuck are you, bitch? Got a friend in need here. A friend with dough.
Mommy stands and takes my hand and pushes me into her closet. I sit on her shoes and try to be quiet and cover my ears and close my eyes tight. The clothes smell of Mommy. I like the smell. I like being here. Away from him. He is shouting.
Where is the little fucking runt?
He has my hair, and he pulls me out of the closet.
Don't want you spoiling the party, you little shit.
He slaps Mommy hard on her face.
Make it good for my friend and you get your fix, bitch.
Mommy looks at me and she has tears. Don't cry, Mommy. Another man comes into the room. A big man with dirty hair. The big man smiles at Mommy. I am pulled into the other room. He pushes me onto the floor, and I hurt my knees.
Now what am I going to do with you, you piece of shit?
He smells nasty. He smells of beer, and he is smoking a cigarette.
I wake. My heart is hammering like I've run 40 blocks chased by the hounds of hell. I vault out of bed, pushing the nightmare back into the recesses of my consciousness, and hurry to the kitchen to fetch a glass of water. I need to see Flynn. The nightmares are worse than ever. I didn't have nightmares when I slept with Anna beside me. Hell. It never occurred to me to sleep with any of my subs. Well, I never felt the inclination. Was I worried that they might touch me in the night? I don't know. It took an inebriated innocent to show me how restful it could be. I'd watched my subs sleep before, but it was always a prelude to waking them for some sexual relief. I remember gazing at Anna for hours when she slept at the Heathman. The longer I watched her, the more beautiful she became. Her flawless skin luminous in the soft light, her dark hair fanning out on the white pillow, and her eyelashes fluttering while she slept. Her lips were parted, and I could see her teeth, and her tongue when she licked her lips. It was a most arousing experience, just watching her. And when I finally went to sleep beside her, listening to her even breathing, watching her breasts rise and fall with each breath, I slept well. So well. I wander into my study and pick up the glider. The sight of it elicits a fond smile and comforts me. I feel both proud to have made it and ridiculous for what I am about to do. It was her last gift to me. Her first gift being... what? Of course. Herself. She sacrificed herself to my need, my greed, my lust, my ego, my fucking damaged ego. Damn, will this pain ever just stop? Feeling a little foolish, I take the glider with me to bed.
What would you like for breakfast, sir?
Just coffee, Gail. She hesitates.
Sir, you didn't eat your dinner.
And?
Maybe you're coming down with something.
Gail, just coffee, please. I shut her down. This is none of her business. Her lips thin, but she nods and turns to the Gaja. I head into the study to collect my papers for the office and look for a padded envelope. I call Roz from the car. Great work on the SIP material, but the business plan needs some revision. Let's offer.
Christian, this is fast.
I want to move quickly. I've emailed you my thoughts on the offering price. I'll be in the office from 7:30. Let's meet.
If you're sure.
I'm sure.
Okay, I'll call Andrea to schedule. I have the stats on Detroit versus Savannah.
Bottom line?
Detroit.
I see. Shit. Not Savannah. Let's talk later. I hang up. I sit, brooding in the back of the Audi, as Taylor speeds through the traffic. I wonder how Anastasia will be getting to work this morning. Perhaps she bought a car yesterday, though somehow I doubt it. I wonder if she feels as miserable as I do. I hope not. Maybe she's realized that I was a ridiculous infatuation. She can't love me. And certainly not now, not after all I've done to her. No one's ever said they loved me, except Mom and Dad, of course, but even then it was out of their sense of duty. Flynn's nagging words about unconditional parental love, even for kids who are adopted, ring in my head. But I've never been convinced. I've been nothing but a disappointment to them.
Mr. Gray?
Sorry, what is it? Taylor has caught me unawares. He's holding the car door open, waiting for me with a look of concern.
We're here, sir.
Shit. How long have we been here?
Thanks. I'll let you know what time this evening.
Focus, Gray.
Andrea and Olivia both look